Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on November 13th, 2015, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Good evening. I'm Bruce Goldstein, Film Forum's Repertory Program Director, and it's been our dream for years to have Charles Bush introduce something here at Film Forum, and I think we found the perfect movie. I want to show you something. Here's Joan Crawford in Johnny Guitar. And now here's a portrait of Charles. And now here they are together. Isn't the resemblance uncanny? And Joan's hair in the beautiful restoration we're showing tonight is really red, fiery red, like Charles Bush's famous wig. Anyway, Charles is, of course, the author and star of such plays as The Divine Sister, The Lady in Question, Red Scare on Sunset, Vampire Lesbians of Sodom, one of the longest-running shows in off-Broadway history, and The Tale of the Allergist Wife. You can applaud each title if you want, which ran for nearly 2 years on Broadway and received a Tony nomination for Best Play. Charles also wrote and starred. This is only for the North Koreans in the audience, by the way. He starred in the film versions of his plays Psycho Beach Party and Die, Mommy, Die, which won him the Best Performance Award at the Sundance Film Festival. And he's also the subject of the acclaimed documentary, The Lady in Question is Charles Bush. In 2003, he was the recipient of a Special Drama Desk Award for Career Achievement, and he was only just beginning. Please welcome the incomparable Charles Bush.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bruce. Oh, gosh. Well, hello, everyone. Well, earlier today, one of my Facebook friends asked me if I was going to be doing this dressed as Joan Crawford as Vienna. And I said, well, I am wearing trousers. So I guess I am dressed as Joan Crawford. Actually, last time that I was at a screening of this movie, fisticuffs, you know, began. It was a terrible thing. It was like the Sharks and the Jets because there were the Nicholas Ray cineasts, and then there was the Crawford Camp faction, and it just was, oh, it was terrifying. You didn't know what was going to happen. So I don't know. You know, we may be in for it tonight. So. Now, I have to say, I don't know very much about the oeuvre of Nicholas Ray. I do know that, you know, there's a wonderful theatricality to his films. There's often a focus on the outsider in society. And this movie is rather interesting in that the screenplay was written by a blacklisted writer, now I just want to make sure I get this right, Ben Maddow, and then his front was Philip Yordan, who split the fee with him. And so actually, I guess it really would not be so, you know, wrong to think that perhaps there really is kind of a McCarthy-era metaphor to this film. And I think, as you'll see, that there's a town that has to testify against its own. So I think that they probably did think that they could get away with putting a real message through this, being a, you know, under the guise of a kind of a fairly low budgeted Western melodrama. However, okay, what I know most about is Joan Crawford. And I guess sometimes I think I'm part of the vice president of the Crawford Restoration Project. I don't really know. I have great sympathy for monsters, I guess, you know. I guess I do. That's why actresses like me. And I do find her a fascinating figure, you know, this woman who came from such a terrible poverty-stricken background and really through incredible grit and determination, you know, had this one of the great, great careers in motion pictures that lasted, you know, longer than maybe, I think she may have the longest career of any actress. And she really did it all alone, too, because when you think about all the pantheon of great female stars of the 30s and 40s, really all of them had a, you know, a strong mother supporting them, or a husband, or, you know, some kind of mentor figure. And Crawford had none of that. She was a dancer who was discovered by a MGM executive who brought her out to California, and really had no one behind her. And she just was determined, and she, you know, refined her look and learned to speak, and often really took responsibility for her own career. She kind of had to. And in this case, this was, you know, I read somewhere that it was written in the 30s, and it's absolutely true today as well, that women in movie actresses basically have 5 good years of their career. And when you think about it, even today, you know, how quickly we go through, you know, Reese Witherspoon, these people, they have 5 good years, and then it's scrambling. You know, it's a sexist world. And so Crawford really did her best to try to keep things going. And the 50s were a very difficult period for her. She had been this huge star at MGM. She then moved to Warner Brothers. And then gradually, in her 40s, opportunities became less. She had moved to lesser studios, Columbia. And then finally, here she's at Republic, which is really, it was kind of a very third-rate operation, known mostly for their westerns. She actually found the novel before it was published of Johnny Guitar, bought the rights to it with the idea of starring in a possible movie, sold it to Republic Pictures. You know, and she did that a couple times. She was the one who actually, I believe, found the novel of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, and brought it to Robert Aldridge, and with the idea of her starring with Betty Davis. So anyway, so back to this movie. So it was her idea, and she actually got along very well with Nicholas Ray. I think everybody involved in this movie had a drinking problem, and he, you know, he liked her, you know, and they began an affair. The big source of contention was her co-star. She had originally wanted Claire Trevor to play opposite her, and instead Claire Trevor, maybe wisely, was otherwise engaged. And so I believe it was Nicholas Ray who suggested Mercedes McCambridge, who was kind of hot at the moment. Just only a few years before, she'd won an Oscar for All the King's Men, Best Supporting Actress. And she really kind of represented a new approach, a very kind of unglamorous, serious actress. And that immediately just went against, you know, Crawford's grain. And she just developed a hate for her. And I guess they just, it was mutual. And the stories go just that, you know, now I'm not, I know Crawford during this period, she was so obsessed with filmmaking that many times she would actually move into the studio. She would actually live in her dressing room and just be there all the time. She liked being immersed in the whole process. And I don't know if she was doing that at Republic or not. However, supposedly, she was late at night, you know, in a drunken rage, furious at Mercedes McCambridge. She went into Mercedes McCambridge's dressing room and took a knife and slashed all of her costumes and her off-screen wardrobe as well. And was witnessed stumbling along the highway at midnight, tossing all the clothes, you know. So it was that kind of set, you know. So they made the movie. The movie wasn't very well received at the time, but later the French, of course, reappraised it. One of the original, I have some quotes here. The original, Bosley Crowther in the New York Times, in his original review, said of Crawford, "She is as sexless as the lions on the public library steps and as sharp and romantically forbidding as a package of unwrapped razor blades." And then some of the other quotes just on the making of the movie. Mercedes McCambridge said Joan was a mean, tipsy, powerful, rotten egg lady. And the leading man, Sterling Hayden, said of Joan, "There is enough money in Hollywood to lure me into making another picture of Joan Crawford, and I like money." And even his wife chimed in, "There's nothing too bad to say about Joan Crawford. If I ever see her again, I'll probably strike her face." And Ernest Borgnine, who plays a supporting role in the movie, he told a story in his memoirs that, you know, Crawford, for all of her you know, eccentricity, was very popular among the crew. And she loved making movies. It was her life. That's when she was happiest. And so she was very egalitarian. And she knew every, you know, she was one of those stars that knew everybody's name and, you know, developed relationships with them. And she had evidently a little impromptu party in her trailer with all the men, the crew, and Mercedes McCambridge happened to, you know, join them, and Crawford didn't care for that too much. And when Mercedes McCambridge said rather pointedly, "Thank you, Joan, for having me," Borgnine was quoted as saying that she, where is that? Crazy Joan thought she was mocking her, and as a result, she let fly a fusillade of insults like I've never heard, not even in the Navy. So, oh, you gotta love her. You just gotta love her. So anyway, so you know, the Crawford cult has embraced this movie, and as well as serious students of film, and it's just a wild picture. I think if you haven't seen it before, it's just fascinating. And I'll shut up right now. But what I do think is interesting about Crawford as an actress, you know, she's not the most nuanced actress, you know. And I think it was Scott Fitzgerald at one point was going to work on a movie of hers and you know, analyzed her on screen in the 30s and said she can't play two things at once. If she's supposed to be telling a fib, she comes off like Benedict Arnold selling off secrets to the, you know, the United States. So, however, you know, what I do think is interesting, you know, she began her career, she had a few years at the very end, tail end of silent movies, and she was quoted saying that she made one of her first movies was with Lon Chaney, you know, and she felt that he influenced her so much that he taught her that being in a movie wasn't just, you know, standing around in front of a camera, but acting and the way she absorbed this kind of full physicality from Chaney. I don't think it's that far fetched to not make that thing. And so, in a way, going right into talkies as a young woman, she never really lost this kind of, and I don't mean it in an excessive, you know, hammy way, but this kind of full body expressiveness. And she doesn't play an emotion, she sort of embodies the emotion. You know, in a movie, so many of her movies like Sudden Fear, where, you know, she's supposed to be terrorized, I mean, she just is terror, you know? And so you don't look to her for, you know, nuance or interesting psychology like you might see in a Bette Davis performance, but you do get this incredible, just visceral kind of acting, and of course, this extraordinary face. I mean, it's the face of a star. Just everything about her. It's a movie star. And I think I remember that when she died, and George Cukor, who had directed her a couple of her best performances, did the eulogy and said something about how the camera loved her and perhaps really was the only real lover. And the camera, the close-up camera, saw a tenderness in her and a vulnerability that no man, no real life lover would ever have seen. I think it's very beautiful, and so I think it's okay to appreciate Crawford. She's outrageous and notorious, but fascinating. So please enjoy the film. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.